Welcome to the Gary DeMar Blogcast, presented by the American Vision and Canon Press. For more from Gary, check out the American Vision collection on the Canon app.
Welcome to the Gary DeMar Blogcast. Today's entry is part two of Mistranslating the Bible to Support Abortion. The claim that an English translation of the Bible was changed to accommodate the Christian right to support its anti-abortion stance is biblically and historically bogus. I made note of these points in the previous article on the subject, but there is even more exegetical and historical evidence that the best translation of the text should read in English so that her children come out. Long before there was a Christian political movement that began in the late 1970s opposing abortion, Umberto Casuto, also known as Moshe David Casuto, who died in 1951, was a Jewish rabbi and biblical scholar born in Florence, Italy. In his commentary on Exodus, he presents an accurate translation of the passage based on the nuances of the Hebrew. Quote, "When men strive together and they hurt unintentionally a woman with child, and her children come forth, but no mischief happens, that is, the woman and the children do not die, the one who hurts her shall surely be punished by a fine. But if any mischief happens, that is, if the woman dies or the children, then you shall give life for life." Now, Casuto's commentary was published in Hebrew in 1951. This was before Roe v. Wade, which took place in 1973, and before the rise of the so-called Christian right, which took place at the end of the 1970s. Casuto was a Jew and not a Christian, and he knew Hebrew better than Rutenberg and Zay. John Gill, who wrote a commentary on the Complete Bible, in his commentary on this passage, is familiar with the Jewish interpretation. John Gill wrote in the 18th century, so this is long before Roe v. Wade and long before the rise of the Christian right. And here's what John Gill writes on the section where it says, "And no mischief follow. To her," Gill writes, "as the targum of Jonathan, and so Jarchi and Aben Ezra restrain it to the woman." That is, they claim that this only applies to the woman. He goes on to say, "And which mischief they interpret of death, as does the targum of Onkelos, but it may refer both to the woman and her offspring," Gill writes, "and not only to the death of them, but to any hurt or damage to either of them," close quote. The KJV, published in 1611, takes a different translation approach, but it is consistent with the text that children are coming out. The King James Version reads, "If men strive and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall surely be punished according to the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine," Exodus 21:22. The use of the word fruit is a descriptive euphemism for a child in the Old Testament, for example, Genesis chapter 30, verse 2, and the New Testament. Remember, Elizabeth responded to Mary this way when she learned of Mary's pregnancy. I quote, "And she spake out with a loud voice and said," remember, this is from the King James translation, "Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb," Luke 1:42. Anyone who claims that the translation of Exodus chapter 21, verse 22 was done in order to accommodate the new Christian rite is just off the beam when it comes to the history of the translation of that particular passage and commentators on that particular passage. This is all one has to do in order to investigate the true meaning of this passage and the history of it is to actually do a little bit of historical digging. An additional translation point needs to be discussed. Tremper Longman takes the position, based on translation ambiguity, that, and I quote, "The safest conclusion is that Exodus 21, verses 22 through 25, should not be used as a proof text in support of either pro-choice, that is, pro-abortion, or pro-life position," close quote. He argues that the passage does not regard the unborn child as fully a person throughout his or her development in the womb. It's only when the unborn baby is fully formed that personhood can be attributed to the unborn child. And at what point does a fetus become fully formed so it becomes a person? See, that's the argument that Tremper Longman is trying to make. Who gets to make that decision and based on what criteria? For most people in the Democrat Party, the fully formed distinction is irrelevant since a woman can decide to kill her unborn baby anytime during her pregnancy. The Democrats in Congress have repeatedly voted against born alive legislation. The legislation would require doctors to care for infants who survive botched abortions. Only two Democrat senators voted for the legislation in 2021. West Virginia's Joe Manchin and Pennsylvania's Bob Casey Jr. By rejecting the Born Alive bill for the third time, Democrats have chosen once again to affirm the deadly logic of abortion, the belief that an unwanted child inside the womb or out of it never gains rights at all. Longman diverges from the Hebrew text and argues that since the Septuagint was used in Jesus' day, and that it was the main translation used not only by Jewish readers, but also by the disciples and the early followers of Jesus who did not read Hebrew. Therefore, its translation is authoritative for us over against the Hebrew, Longman claims. The Septuagint, often abbreviated as LXX, representing the number 70, is a mid-third century BC Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures. The New Testament writers don't use the Septuagint exclusively. Jesus and the New Testament writers quote from the Hebrew text and the Septuagint. Jesus quotes a part of Exodus 21, verse 24, and Matthew 5, 38. But the Hebrew text and Septuagint translation agree. The writers are selective in what they quote from the Septuagint. It does not mean that the Septuagint as a whole is authoritative. This is true of the many English translations of the Bible, as we've seen with the way Exodus 21:22 is translated by some. The following translation of Exodus 21, verses 22 through 25 is from Tremper Longman's book, The Bible and the Ballad. If two men fight and they strike a woman who is pregnant, and her child comes out, but while not yet fully formed, he will be forced to pay a fine. Whatever the woman's husband imposes, he will pay with a valuation. But if it is fully formed, he will give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Instead of translating the Hebrew word asan as harm, the Septuagint translates it as not yet fully formed. This is not a translation, but an interpretation, and a bad one at that. The Samaritan Pentateuch, like the Septuagint, differs from the Hebrew Masoretic text in numerous places, but agrees with the Hebrew on Exodus chapter 21, verses 22 through 25. Quote, if men strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart, and yet no mischief follow, he shall be surely punished according to the woman's husband. And he shall pay as the judges determine. And if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, smiting for smiting, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. The translation issue between the Hebrew text and the Septuagint comes down to the following. How did the Septuagint come to translate the Hebrew word asan, harm, by a Greek word which means fully formed? Many scholars have pointed to the influence of Greek philosophical ideas. For Aristotle, an unformed embryo was not yet a human being. Now remember, this is Greek philosophy. If the fetus is fully formed, then miscarriage would harm a human being. However, if it is unformed, then it is not a human being, and so there is no serious harm. This seems to be the underlying idea of that particular translation in the Septuagint. This next point gets a little complicated, but the claim is made by Thomas F. McDaniel, and quoting, once upon a time, there were two distinctly different Hebrew words which were spelled with the consonants asan. Now, keep in mind that in In Hebrew, there are no vowel letters. All the letters are consonants. And what you have are vowel pointings and signs. So if you pick up an original Hebrew manuscript, there are no vowel notations in there. It was all based upon the tonal use with the consonants, and lots of times that the actual words look the same, but because of the inflection in sound, change the meaning of it. It's the same in other symbolic type languages like in Mandarin and so forth. To continue, there was the well-recognized assan cited in all standard Hebrew lexicons. There was also another assan in the early Israelite and Alexandrian dialects of Hebrew, which became lost in the later Judean and Samaritan Hebrew dialects. If you're not following this, that's okay. It is kind of complicated. As far as I have been able to determine, McDaniel does not offer any evidence for his claim. Once upon a time is not evidence. The major problem with Tremper Longman's view on the abortion issue and his support for Joe Biden, he did in fact support Joe Biden in the 2020 election, and the Democrat Party, you vote for Joe Biden, you're also voting for the Democrats, is that Democrats believe that even a fully formed unborn baby can be killed. This is hardly the Christian position, even by Septuagint translation standards. Since the Democrat Party supports abortion throughout a woman's pregnancy, it would mean that the abortion of Jacob and Esau, John the Baptist, and Jesus would have been lawful any time up to birth. Longman certainly does not believe the Bible or common sense would support such a position, but that's the political party he supported in the 2020 election. In the final analysis, the Democrat Party supports the right of the mother to kill him or her even when fully formed. In addition, the Democrat Party is calling for the end of the Hyde Amendment that prohibited tax dollars from being used to pay for abortions. Here's how Representative Barbara Lee, a Democrat from Oakland, California, defends taxpayer funding of abortion. Quote, "It's an issue of racial justice, and it's an issue of discrimination against low-income women, women of color, women who don't have access to what middle and upper income women have in terms of the choice to have an abortion," close quote. In the United States, the abortion rate for black women is almost 5 times that of white women. The Black Panthers in the early 1970s claimed that legalized abortion would destroy our people. Jesse Jackson, in a 1970s interview with Jet magazine, characterized abortion as black genocide. He has since changed his position. "It's gotten so bad that there are some who advocate that a mother should have the right to euthanize her infant up to almost 3 months of age because there may be a defect that didn't express itself at birth. Why not 4 months? Given the operating assumptions of a consistent materialist worldview, who's to say that any life can't be terminated given enough authority by the administrative state in the name of saving the world? If the administrative state can force people to be vaccinated for the good of the world, what can't it mandate?"
If you enjoyed this week's episode, listen to the audiobook for Gary DeMar's Restoring the Foundation of Civilization, available now in the Canon app.